Thank you for inviting me here. I always enjoy staying in this place, and I apologize for essentially my computer. I don't know what happened to it, and hopefully I will be able to go to the very end with this talk. Basically, the subject of this talk is, so to say, loosely connected to the subject of this activity, but in fact, maybe this loose connection is basically a temporal phenomenon, because as we learned from yesterday's colloquium by Ilya Grusberg, there is a deep and not fully understood connection between the learner equation, learner phenomenon, I would say, and disordered systems, and only few work exist in this direction. And hopefully, what I will be talking today about will be much stronger related to the subject of this activity in the near future. At least I hope very much for that. So let's basically take this talk as some introduction to the subject of eigenfunction multifractality in disordered quantum systems, and probably think together how can it be described using this new machinery. For instance, yesterday we learned that zeros of Wigner-Dyson random matrices fall in the universality class that can be described by Lerner dynamics, so maybe this problem too. Okay, so then first of all I would like to mention my collaborators. These are people who were postdocs at International Center for Theoretical Physics at different times: Alexander Osipov, Oleg Yevtushenko. Emilio Cuevas is a professor in Spanish city of Murcia. Okay, so I start with some cartoon. So all this problem began with studying Anderson transition, the behavior of the system, of disordered system with increasing disorder. So it is well known that if the disorder is weak, then the eigenstates are mostly extended. All eigenstates are extended in the system. Up to some mobility edge in the energy, and this extended states, okay, so it's not very very good picture, but it is supposed to be Gaussian fluctuations of the wave functions. But sometimes, so the Gaussian fluctuations, it is what would random classical Wigner-Dyson random matrix theory give, but there are some peculiarities, and those peculiarities are known as pre-localized states. So even in the extended states, there could be some special states with peaks on top of the background of the usual Gaussian fluctuation, and this is what cannot be described by Wigner-Dyson theory, but what exists in real quantum systems. When the disorder is strong, then we have localized states, so the amplitude is exponentially small everywhere, but in some point. And okay, so the transition from such type of states to such type of states is known as Anderson localization transition. And what I will be mostly concerned about is the eigenfunctions right at the transition. So in the infinite system, you can distinguish only three different regimes: the regime of extended states, the regime of localized state, and the regime of critical state. Of course, in finite systems, there is a crossover between them, but I will mostly be discussing these three cases. So the critical wave function, on the first glance, it looks like a natural development from this point to that point, but in fact it possesses some property which does not exist neither here nor there, and this property is known as multifractality. So what is how to understand it qualitatively is the following. So suppose that I make a cut of that wave functions of that wave function at some level. So it's not well seen, but suppose that I choose a level and make a cut, and then I make a map of all the regions where the wave functions, let's say, is bigger than this level. Square of wave functions is bigger than this level. Now, what appears to happen that this map is just a fractal. So let's think of it. Okay, so this is a cartoon, of course. So let's think of the regions where the wave functions is bigger than this level as of dark regions, and where it is below is of bright regions. And so we will have a fractal structure with a certain fractal dimensions. And naturally, if you change the level, suppose that you raise the level from this point upwards, then you understand intuitively that if the fractality is still there, the fractal dimensions should be smaller. And this is indeed the case. So normally the fractal dimensions depends on this level and increases with increasing of the level. So, of course, I can do the same procedure in this case and that case, and here I will get just a spot, and here I will get, in fact, more complicated picture, so I put some structural background, but in fact, it is not a structural background, it consists of zeros of this wave function, which, as Ilya told yesterday, the clusters of such zeros, they follow Lerner evolution. So at least in this case, there is some connection to the Lerner equation. But now how to describe the situation more precisely in a mathematical way, and this description starts with the notion of inverse participation ratio. So if you take the wave function and raise it to the square, to the second power and sum of all sides, then we get 1 by normalization. The wave function is supposed to be normalized. But if we raise it to, let's say, to the fourth power, then what happens is the following. If we have something like extended function, then basically wave function squared by normalization is 1 over n, where n is the total number of sides. So the fourth power is 1 over the n squared, and when you sum over all sides, there will be 1 over n. So this inverse participation ratio is 1 over n, where the n is the number of sides of the lattice, if it is a lattice, if the wave function lives on the lattice. So if it lives in the space, so that will be the volume of the space. Now, if we go to localized state, what happens is precisely the same as here, with the only difference that now wave function occupies not the whole space, but only a part of the space of the size of localization radius. And so instead of 1 over volume, we will have 1 over localization volume. And in fact, there is a fundamental difference between this and that, because when the volume tends to infinity, this guy goes to zero, but this guy stands finite, and this was one of the criterion of localization in early days of localization. Now, what happens here in the critical case? What happens here is the following, that the wave function is still extended. Therefore, this guy goes to zero when the size goes to infinity. But it goes to zero according to some non-trivial power law. 1 over size of the system to the power d2, where d2 is a certain fractal dimension, which is smaller than d. Basically, how to identify the fractal dimension, one should compute such object and then see how does it scale with the system size, and if it scales in a, as a power law with non-trivial power, that means that we have at least fractality. So how to deal with multi-fractality?
I have a question. So you take that picture of putting this, like going to higher and higher, and then
I will tell you how to mimic higher level by means of that.
So
it's very simple.
Depend on what level you choose.
Yeah, of course. But here I do something which does not know about the level. Here, you see, what I'm going to do is the following. So to visualize the fractal picture, I use the notion of the level. But to mathematically describe it, I use raising wave function to a certain power. And it is clear that the higher is the power, effectively, the higher is the level. So basically, the multifractality means the following, that I define, I generalize the object of similar to inverse participation ratio, raising to an arbitrary power, raising the wave function to an arbitrary power q, and then clearly the higher is the power, the higher is this effective level, and I will get some power law here, which is some function of this q. And this function can be conveniently written in the following way, where the factor q minus 1 simply accounts for the normalization, because if q is equal to 1, then there, by normalization, the object should be equal to 1. So it should go to 0, tau should go to 0 when q is 1. To generalize the fractal dimension, one can write down such a simple formula, and then, for instance, if q is equal to 2, so this is 1, and I have just d2, and then I have a generalization of that. So this fractal dimension, as I said, it is normally a decreasing function of q, and from 0 to the dimensionality of space on which this wave function is defined. There are different models where this dq depends differently. So for instance, recently there was a talk by Chris Mudry and co-workers where he discussed two-dimensional Dirac equation in a random vector potential, and in this case this fractal dimension behaves linearly and then becomes constant. In some other models it could be just a continuous function, but it is something which decreases with q. Sorry?
Same as this freezing transition?
Yes, it's about the freezing transition. Now, but this is a property of one eigenfunction. So I just described the scaling of one eigenfunction. Now, this is not all. Actually, the important property of, I would not say that this is fractality. This is something which is normally associated with multifractality. But this is not, this is an additional property. And this property is the following. Let's take two wave functions, not one, two at different energies, and let's fix the energy difference. And let's consider the object which at omega equal to zero, when we take one wave function, would be inverse participation ratio. Now let's take such an object and study it as a function of the energy difference. Important thing is that now the space point is the same, so it is a local operator that summed over all points. And what usually happens in the disordered systems is what first was found by John Chalker in 1990, and And this is the following, that the correlation function drops off, it decreases, of course, when omega increases, but it decreases very, very slowly. It decreases as a power law where the power is smaller than one. And so when the fractality is very strong, so the dimensionality d2, which controls this correlation function according to John Chalker scaling, when this d2 goes to zero, this function becomes 1 over omega, so it attains some definite limit. And this is amazing. Why it is amazing? It is amazing because what is the fractal object with dimensionality going to zero? You know, one would expect that that this object somehow would tend to a localized object, which is defined on a finite support. But we know that for the localized function, nothing like that happens. If we have localized function, usually if we take the next eigenvalue, then they will be localized in different corners of your system, and they will be not talking to each other. Here, according to scaling arguments which John has presented, we have a completely different situation. So however sparse is fractal, nevertheless, you know, I imagine such fractals as my fingers, so my hand. So this is one fractal, this is the other. Taking a trend, and they would normally not overlap because they are sparse. But in fact, this formula shows that they do. So this means the following, that critical wave functions are extremely sensitive to the profile of the random potential. So this wonder, of course, its origin is that all those wave functions live in the same random potential. And so nobody is surprised that almost all the traffic from Italy to Germany goes through Brenner pass, and here too. So if we have some value in the random potential, so all those critical functions tend to live in it. And therefore, this value could be just very sparse pass. But they all live there to some extent. And so this happens. It was first proven numerically by John Chalker and Daniel for the Chalker-Coddington network. Then there were numerous numerical evidences using the random matrix ensemble that I will be discussing later on. So basically, again, to draw a cartoon, I would say that if we have a fractal for one wave function, then we have a fractal for the other, and those fractals are very close to each other. Now, if we take localized wave function, the situation will be like this. So however sparse is the fractal, this situation and that situation are principally different. Now, okay, so this is basically what I told you about, is some experience, mostly from scaling arguments and numerical works. Now, then what would be very desirable to have is some canonical system which possesses the same property and which would be easy enough to formulate and also probably easy enough to treat in an analytical, exact analytical way. So we know that for structureless extended state, there is such a paradigm, a universal paradigm. It is a Wigner-Dyson random Gaussian random matrix theory. So we can prove certain things using this this theory, and they will be excellently working for extended for quantum mechanics of extended states, for instance, for quantum dots, they have been experimentally studied, and there was an excellent agreement. Now, so what would be nice to have is another random matrix theory, as simple as it is possible, and yet drastically different from Wigner-Dyson, and containing these properties. So, such random matrix theory is a subject of my talk. It does exist, and it is so-called power law banded random matrices. So, what is it? First of all, this power law banded random matrices, in the context of multifractality, have been introduced first by Millin and Fedorov in 1906, then there was our work in 97, then in 2000, and then several others. So basically, what is it? It is, first of all, I remind you what is Wigner-Dyson random matrix theory. The Wigner-Dyson random matrix theory is a Hamiltonian, which is Hermitian, the matrix n by n. Each entry of this matrix is independently fluctuating Gaussian random variable, which could be real or complex or quaternion, for instance. And and what is important is, okay, so usually the average value is taken to be zero. An important thing is that the variance of the fluctuation of each entry is just constant. It is one, let's say. In certain normalization, it is just one for all I and j. And this is the Wigner-Dyson theory. So what we can, what we do with this critical random matrix theory, we do very little. Use the same assumption about independently fluctuating entries, each of them fluctuating around zero, each of them being a Gaussian random variable. The only thing that changes is that now there is no invariance under unitary transformation, which was in the Wigner-Dyson case, and that the variance depends on the distance from the main diagonal, and depends in a very special way. So important thing is that at large separation from the main diagonal, it behaves like 1 over I minus j square. So one can consider, of course, different power law, but that would not be a critical ensemble. That would not possess multifractality and things like that. Only this magic number of 2 means criticality. But then, okay, so we know that we have certain situations in the physics of disordered system where we have critical point, for instance, integer quantum Hall effect. We have a critical point where the Fermi energy lies in the middle of the Landau band. Now, we have Anderson models of various kind. They also have different, they also have a critical point. And in what is specific to all these models is the spectrum of fractal dimensions. So the simplest situation, which was discussed, by the way, by Chris Moody, is where this spectrum of fractal dimensions needs only one parameter to define, because it is parabolic. And so in this random matrix theory that I am discussing, there is such parameter, which has a meaning of the bandwidth. So basically, the entries behave like in the Wigner-Dyson case. Suppose this B is large, then the entries are constant when I minus J is smaller than B, and then start to decrease like 1 over I minus J squared. So this bandwidth is what controls the fractality. For instance, important thing is that this model possesses multifractality and is critical for all values of B. But if B is large, if B is large, 1 over B is small, then naturally we approach to Wigner-Dyson case. And in the Wigner-Dyson case, the fractal dimensions is equal to 1. So if I mimic the real systems, then the ratio of, let's say, fractal dimensionality d2 by d will be 1 for in the limit where b goes to infinity. This is the Wigner-Dyson limit. Then it becomes smaller. Then there is a limit which mimics the 2 plus epsilon expansion of, let's say, Anderson model. And then it goes down, down, down. And for very small b, the fractality is arbitrarily large. And some people think that it corresponds to Anderson model at infinite dimensions. But this is the open question. Nobody knows if there is something in between or not. So what is good here that we can test both weak fractality and strong fractality using one model. By the way, the three-dimensional Anderson model of the orthogonal symmetry class corresponds to the parameter around 0.6. So it is, you know, it depends on the test. So you may access this point, try to access this point from weak fractality, and also try to access it from strong fractality, and both things have been done.
How do you know that this is critical? You said it's critical. And it's not clear that there's another model that this describes the critical properties of. So I don't know. That's my question. Why do you say it's critical? Always has critical wave functions.
How unique is this model?
What makes it critical?
Critical. Okay, so this is I tell you what means critical. Critical means the following: that maybe it is some loose terminology. I mean only the following: that if statistics of eigenstates is multifractal, then I say it is critical. Because why critical? Because we know that this is the property of eigenfunctions in the critical point of Anderson transition. It is also.
Normally, you have another model, and you find an arbitrary fixed point, and then you say this is the describing the critical theory. You're starting the theory.
This exponent 2 and the definition of the variance can be made to 2 alpha for any number alpha. Okay? As alpha varies, you can always think about this model as just one dimensional chain with random hops. It's a Hamiltonian with random hops on a chain. These are long range random hops with the power low tail of how we call alpha and alpha, right? When these hops are decaying faster than 2, you get localization. You get eigenstates that are local.
Yeah, but some weird localization. It's not normal one.
Greater than 2 is localized. Yeah,
But not precisely the same as, you should have it.
I don't know how you talking about spin chain, because he's just talking about these are the entries in a big matrix.
Yeah, but you can think about this Hamiltonian over random hopping.
Okay, so maybe you go further on and you will then ask your question. Okay, good. So look, maybe partially I will answer.
It's critical in a different way that I meant in terms of aligning at this point.
Let me. Okay, John.
In general, the critical.
It is a different exponent. The variance decays algebraically as a function of I and J. So, and it is can be shown that it's already sitting in the exponent.
Okay, so then maybe this slide gives some. John, please.
Just in reply to Kai's question, so if the magnitude of the hopping falls off like 1 over the dimension, like separation to the minus the dimension, then that's a marginal case. If hopping falls off slower than that, you don't get localization. So, and here is the square of the average of the square going like 1 over.
Yeah, okay, so it's like the Harris criterion in some version.
No, it's a part okay, it will be probably more clear in later on. So first of all, this model, I would say, is a right, in quotation mark, deformation of the Wigner-Dyson RMT, deformation that drives it out of the invariance and the unitary transformation, but such that for B much bigger than 1, but finite, we can use all the relationship from the Wigner-Dyson theory, and the only thing that has been that should be changed is the kernel. The kernel, which in the Wigner-Dyson theory is something like sine by sine x minus x prime, x minus x prime. I'm talking about level statistics. So x would be distance in the energy space. So if you are studying the level statistics of the Wigner-Dyson theory, the spectral statistics, then it is formulated in terms of only one kernel, and then there are, if you need arbitrary distribution function, so you write down a matrix with entries equal to this kernel, and then you will get arbitrary order correlation function. So basically what happens to this model at large B is that this kernel changes in a very familiar way. So instead of x minus x prime, we have sinh, which tells us that this has some analogy to fermion systems with finite temperature, which is 1 over B. Because this is the kernel of a Fermi system in one dimensions, non-interacting with the temperature 1 over B. And this analogy, in fact, has been studied in our work with Mutalib in 97 and in our work with Alex Zvelik in 2000. And we have shown that when B is large, then basically the spectral statistics of that model is the same as statistic in the coordinate space of the Calogero-Sutherland model of specific coupling constant, which corresponds to Dyson universality classes, orthogonal, unitary, and symplectic. And in particular, for large distances between energy levels, so the smooth part of correlation, not smooth, but for large distances, the correlation function is given by the Luttinger liquid phenomenology, and all that tells you that this random matrix ensemble has some deep relation with, hopefully has a deep relation with conformal field theory, because we know that Calogero-Sutherland model has such a relation. But in fact, this is, you may say, well, this is one-dimensional system, and for conformal field theory we need two dimensions. In fact, it is one-dimensional system, but with non-local power law interaction, and exactly the interaction which would correspond to local field theory, but in two dimensions, but with a line of defects. Because if you have a line of defects, then basically you take the Green function, which is 1 over kx plus ky squared, and if we then would put, let's say, yy and kx, then we should integrate over dky kx squared plus ky squared, and we will get 1 over modulus kx. And So that would correspond to a green function, so the spectrum would be kx, and this is exactly what corresponds to x minus x prime squared. So basically, it's not a theorem, but it is some indication that together with all other facts, that this probably is a very good model because it can have maybe some exact description in terms of conformal field theory. But this is not done. Now, let me also give you some flavor about how does this random matrix theory correspond to a critical Anderson model. So what means Anderson model? I think you know that this is a tight binding model with a Hopping constant 1 and on-site energy, which is a fluctuating number with certain distribution, and it doesn't matter too much which is this the distribution. It could be box probability distribution or Gaussian. Only the critical disorder depends on that, but not the correlation function. And what people study numerically and very extensively, it's so-called level spacing distribution function. It is when you take the spectrum of such, you take Anderson model with many, many degrees of freedom. It has a very rich spectrum. Now you take the energy level and then find the probability density to have the next one at a given distance. And this probability, this so-called P of S spacing distribution function, it is known from the Wigner-Dyson theory. And this line, which is barely seen, it is what Wigner-Dyson theory would give. This is the body of the distribution, and this is the tail of the distribution in the log scale. And of course, you see the level repulsion phenomenon, where the probability drops to level cannot be very close to each other. And this corresponds to three Dyson universality classes. This is orthogonal, unitary, and symplectic class, where the matrix is made of real numbers, complex numbers, and real quaternions. And so this is the Wigner-Dyson curves. Now, points which are almost coinciding with the solid line, these are points of exact diagonalization of the Anderson model in three dimensions. So it is three-dimensional orthogonal, three-dimensional unitary, three-dimensional symplectic. Of course, with increasing the number of degrees of freedom in the matrix statistics becomes worse, but still these are points of exact diagonalization of the Anderson model. And the solid curve is the following. You compute this P of S. You compute it semi-analytically from a random matrix ensemble which is related to this critical ensemble. Not exactly this one. I don't have time to exactly formulate this, but this is definitely the one which is isomorphic to it. And then you do the following. You look at the tail, which is not seen here. You look at the tail, and you observe that the tail is simple exponent in all the cases, and also in this random matrix model. Now, but the slope depends on the bandwidth of the random matrix ensemble. So you fix the parameter B just to fit the slope which corresponds to numerical data. This slope is not seen here. It is it's somewhere here. Now, while this parameter fixed using the tail, you can plot the whole curve, and this is the result. So this shows that actually You know, this is not a trivial curve, and have such a coincidence. And you know, in this case, even in this case, where the Wigner-Dyson curve is close, the coincidence is much better. But in the symplectic case, it is very far from the Wigner-Dyson. So it's what is known about the correspondence of that random matrix theory to real, so to say, physics systems like Anderson model. Now, what about?
Roger, how much do you want to say there? I mean, do you want to say that there's an exact equivalence or just that the two things?
I have shown you what I have shown. I do not know. At least it means that if you choose only one parameter like B, you have a coincidence which is not worse than the Wigner surmise. We know basically the story with the Wigner surmise, right? The Wigner surmise is not an exact distribution, but it looks so close to it that so maybe this is the situation like a Wigner surmise. But at least I don't know how to comment on that. So this is simply what is an experiment. Also, there are, you know, this is the best statistics that people can do by diagonalization of Anderson model. For eigenfunction statistics, the results are much worse. I mean, the result of diagonalization of the Anderson model. But even in this case, Mirlin and co-workers, Mirlin Evers, they have studied the distribution of inverse participation ratio for this random matrix ensemble and for Anderson model, and also as much as error bar allow, you may see that they are similar. So I don't know. Anyway, so what I'm going to do is to advertise such random matrix ensemble as an excellent playground for the effect of fractality. And okay, so this is something which I go very fast. I mean, this is a standard thing how random matrix can be treated using the supersymmetric field theory. What you do, you start with expression of the retarded and advanced function, Green's function, in terms of the Gaussian integrals with this random Hamiltonian here. You observe, of course, the problem of denominator when you want to average something, because the observable is not just this Gaussian integral, but normalized by the partition function. But then you introduce additional anti-commuting numbers with the shortest integration table in the world. And this shortest integration table in the world says that this integral is equal to 1 over square root of 2 pi, and all the other integral is equal to 0. And then you find that this partition function, inverse partition function, is just a Gaussian integral over this Grassmann variables. And then you replace this guy by additional integration over mu and mu star. So just adding the same functional, but not depending on commuting variables, rather depending on anti-commuting variables mu. And then you may switch to a composite fields which contains both of them, and then in terms of such field, the quadratic action is just very very simple. And then since you don't have any denominator here, you may just average over u over h in this action, and this averaging because of the Gaussian distribution of H is simple, and what you get is the quadratic term in this psi, or you can alternatively introduce such a super matrix, and then it will be the quadratic term in terms of this super matrix. So basically, this is the exact formulation in terms of the super matrix field theory, and this this specific function, the variance, it now acts as a coupling constant here. Now, what people usually do, usually did, they consider this action somehow not convenient, and wanted to reformulate this action in such a way that it is not g, but g to minus 1, which is the coupling constant. And the reason was the following, that historically this the description was first introduced by Efetov in 93, and he considered the Wigner-Dyson random matrices, and for Wigner-Dyson, this coupling constant is 1 independently of the difference between I and J, and the inverse coupling constant would be something like delta function, and therefore it is it makes sense to do. But since then, you know, people start to study different random matrices, but still by inertia, what people did, they did Hubbard-Statonovich transformation of the quadratic term, thus passing from g to g to minus 1. Then they performed integration over quadratic action psi, and then they had some nonlinear form in this new matrices, and then they did settle point approximation. And this settle point appears to be degenerate. So if you find one such matrix, say lambda, non-trivial matrix lambda, you will find then anyone which is a rotation of this matrix would be also a settle point. If you neglect some small terms which if you neglect actually the dependence of this matrix on I and J, so if you consider them constant. Now if you allow such slow dependence, then what you do, you sit on that settle point, you make such an ansatz, and then allow this P naught through this Q depend on the site. And then what you get is the familiar sigma model, which you know, which looks very much like the action that I have been displaying before, but now it is g to minus 1 and not g which enters here. But the price for that, the price for this g to minus 1 was the settle point. The settle point condition, and this settle point is only then good, you know, good deep if the sum of all sides of the coupling constant is much bigger than 1. If this is true, then all the rest is correct. This action. Works, and it actually has been used for this particular random matrix model in the case of weak fractality, because the applicability condition g to much bigger than 1 is exactly when your fractality, when your b is large, and then bandwidth is large, and when fractality is weak. But what I'm going to...
Why is Q square equals 1?
This is the settle point condition. Because you see, this matrix lambda, which is the solution of the settle point is such that lambda squared is equal to 1. And these are two, this is just the settle point condition. And
the standard idea how to get a sigma model out of this Hubbard-Sultanovich, yeah. We've done this.
Okay, so I cannot discuss it longer. What I would like to tell you now is the following. I would like to say that this sigma model is not the only way to study random matrices. It is only the way to study random matrices which are close to full matrix, close to Wigner-Dyson. If you have almost diagonal matrices where the fluctuating matrix elements away from the main diagonal are very small, then this G is almost 1, and therefore such sigma model cannot be derived. What you have to use in this case is the initial formulation, the formulation which is essentially the formulation in terms of psi and psi bar, which contains G and not G1. And in some sense, these are two dual representation, but only in some loose sense. Because in that case, the structure of Q is completely different. There is nothing like settle point. There's nothing like settle point condition here. But instead, there is a structure of the projector. So, so we can loosely say that it is not duality, but the duality in which the target space is different. So, duality. Okay, but then what we have basically, returning to our random matrix model, we have a 1 over G action, which is nonlinear sigma model, and which was successfully used for B much bigger than 1, for weak fractality. And there is a G action, which is actually the psi functional, and it is exact, and it is a good tool to apply for strong fractality. So basically, here you see what happens. If we have this critical random matrix ensemble, then at large distances, G minus 1 and G behaves in the same power law way. The only difference is that here there is a small parameter B, and here there is none. Now, then maybe very quickly, few words about the structure of this new Q field, which I defined here. So in the usual sigma model, which there are some people of that community here, and it's mostly for them, in the usual sigma model, what we have is the following. We have the Q matrix in which can be parameterized in such a way that anti-commuting variables are separated multiplicatively from the commuting ones. And this resembles the spin representation in terms of fermions and Pauli matrices. So if you write, C dagger, sigma, C, that would be spin representation. So here it is also possible to do the following, to put all the anti-commuting variables here and there, and all the commuting variables here. So it is basically the smart change of variables from psi to other variables. So there was first the psi functional with bosons, boson variable and fermionic anti-commuting variable, and you introduce instead some other variables, other anti-commuting and commuting variables, phi and lambda. And when you do so, you may represent this Q in the very same form as for the sigma model. The only difference is this this inner matrix, which in some loose sense is the Pauli matrix, and Now, what I here I really make a comparison for the sigma model and for the new G functional. And this sigma is just diagonal matrix in the boson fermionic space. And for the usual sigma model, it contains two sectors. One of them is called bosonic sectors, and the other is called fermionic sectors. And if you look at this matrix and study which transformation makes it diagonal, you will see that this matrix is made diagonal by the usual rotation. This matrix is made diagonal by the usual rotation. And this is a rotation on a hyperboloid. So the symmetry of this would be non-compact symmetry like that, and here the compact symmetry like this. And this is about the usual sigma model. In the theory that I'm proposing, the fermionic, this corner is exactly equal to zero.
Why is it zero?
Because it is a projector from the very beginning. So this corner is exactly equal to zero. But this corner is almost the same as here, but there is a difference. The difference is that here you have only one constant lambda, not constant, only one variable lambda, except for phase variables. That controls everything, and that lambda is bigger than one. Here we have two lambdas, lambda one and lambda two, and all of them, both of them are bigger than zero. So important is not that they are bigger than one or zero. Important is that they may take arbitrarily large values. So we have again a non-compactness, but non-compactness of different type. Here, for instance, trace is equal to zero. Here it is not. And this is the fact that trace is not equal to zero gives you an additional degree of freedom, which is R, real axis. Okay, so basically, as I said, in terms of separation of commuting and anti-commuting variables, this G theory is the same as sigma model. In terms of the symmetry of the rest, it is a little bit different. So what to do with that? So look, people can try different things. But one thing is just very natural, and this thing is the following. So, as I said, the G theory is convenient when we deal with very strong fractality, when this, so to say, bandwidth is much smaller than one. So, what happens then? Then let's return back from all this complication of field theory. Let's return back to the quantum mechanical problem. And the quantum mechanical problem is basically the problem of building one particle green one particle wave function. So we know that this one particle wave function can be built from the functions localized on the level just via the resonance interaction between levels. But what is happening when B is very small is that the range of fluctuations of the on-site level on the site I is much bigger than the hopping integral between these two sites. And only when they are matching so that the difference between the levels is smaller than the hopping integral, then K can belong to the same wave function, so they can be in resonance. So basically what we have here, we have a rare coincidence, of two levels, which may fluctuate in a much wider range than the resonance condition. So it is like, you know, like the diluted gas, where you have rare collision of two particles, even more rare collision of three particles, and so on. In this case, people reformulate the problem of computing correlation functions in such a way that you first take into account collision of two particles, then of three, then of four, and so on. And basically, the same idea can be implemented starting from this field theoretical description. And the idea is that you first single out the part of the action which is local, which is defined on one side only, and the part which depends on two should be rearranged in the following way. So you expand this exponent. This is e to minus f. This is e to minus action. You expand this interaction part, this exponent, and then rearrange this exponent in such a way that the sum appears just linearly. So you first take into account two sides, then three sides, and so on. And this is the exact rearrangement of the interaction term, but this is the one which corresponds to this idea, to taking into account two levels, three levels, and so on. So if you take only this term, then you will get the results for the diagonal matrix. Then, of course, it is very far from the physics. But then, if you take already the next term, then you will get access to this small but long-range tail, and then physics completely changes. So then, if necessary, you can go further on. I can show you one result of how it works. So let's return to this correlation function which I was discussing in the beginning, the correlation function which is amazing because of long-range correlations in the critical model. Now, and I can compute this correlation function using this functional representation. So all I have to do, I actually can compute any correlation function because it is a matter of the pre-exponential factor. And all the rest is standard. So you give me the correlation function, I will compute it using this virial expansion method. And in particular, this correlation function, if you take this particular critical random matrix ensemble and do manipulations as I described before, so take into account this term and that term only, not three point terms, and exactly integrate over all super matrices, so you can do it. And if you fulfill this program, what you get for this function is a very simple start. So it is all. This summation means a particular form of the coupling constant. So basically, n is I minus j. So this is all what we can get for the unitary ensemble, the simplest one. And now let's compare two things. This is this is the plot of that function. I just used mathematical plotting. And this is a result of diagonalization of the critical random matrix ensemble with B 0.6. So you see what happens. Quantitatively it is very good, but qualitatively it's perfect because this part is the power law which I have been talking about. And here this power law also is seen, but in this simple approach this power is simply minus one. So in order to get a non-trivial power, you should do more sophisticated analysis. It is simply minus one. Now, then there is a saturation at small frequencies, and this saturation is just at the level of inverse participation ratio. And also there is another feature. At large energy separation, you have a power which is minus 2, and here 2. So this power minus 2 is a specific feature of all almost diagonal random matrices. So the matrices in which you have just diagonal of which every element fluctuates with the variance 1, and even the next diagonal having small parameter as the amplitude of fluctuations. And in that case, you will have a strange phenomenon, which is just which I call eigenfunction repulsion. So what happens is the following: that this level is the level of if I would decouple this to psi, if I would decouple this to psi, I would get this level. Now the real correlation goes below it, so it becomes anti-correlation. And anti-correlation means repulsion of eigenfunctions in contrast to repulsion of eigenvalues. So the eigenvalue repulsion would be seen if the correlation function would allow me. I would see it at very low frequencies. But here, at frequencies bigger than b, I see this repulsion of eigenfunctions. This is a phenomenon which is very simple, but I don't have time to discuss it. This is simply to show you how this, first of all, that this critical behavior, very slow decay, is a real thing, and to show you how to get it, even approximately, from the analytic approach. And now the last thing.
We have to wrap up slowly.
The last slide. And the last slide, just for those who ask, and so what? Where can it be used? Apart from, and there is one application which we recently did. This is the following. Suppose that you are close to the Anderson transition. You have a three-dimensional sample which is a disorder very close to critical. And you ask the same question as people ask in 58, 59, about the Cooper phenomenon. Suppose that we have an attraction, particle attraction, with a matrix element which looks like that. So it's a point-like attraction which acts only when the energy of the corresponding states relative to Fermi energy is smaller than some Debye frequency or whatever. So it's basically the Cooper phenomenon, but as an input, it was the statistics of those one particle wave function. And that statistic is supposed to be multifractal. And then, I don't have time to, because it would be another talk. This paper is just sent to journal. What happens is the following, that if you take this statistics like Gaussian orthogonal ensemble, Wigner-Dyson, then you will immediately uncover the Budding-Cooper-Schrieffer result that the superconducting temperature is exponent of minus 1 over lambda, where lambda is an attraction strength. But if you say, suppose that this is a multifractal statistics with certain fractal dimension d2, because it is psi squared. Then, instead of that, you will have this, where E naught is some upper cutoff for energy cutoff for multifractality. And then you recognize this is basically because of that. Of that stuff, you see, this is the level of this correlation function, which corresponds to both insulator and metal. So both in the Wigner-Dyson case and in the case of the so-called banded random matrices where the decay is exponential, you will find this correlation function to be a constant in this region, and constant is equal to 1. And the critical wave, critical correlation is enhanced. And it is exactly because of this enhancement, and it is exactly because of this power law that you have this equation for critical temperature, and as a result you have the critical temperature that depends as a power law on the coupling constant and not the exponent. So if the coupling constant is small, then this wins over that, and we come to a conclusion that disorder may help to superconductivity. Provided, of course, that it is only attraction that is taken into account, but not the Coulomb repulsion. Real life is tough and unfair. So, okay, and this is all. So this is all. Instead of the conclusion, I just list things that I have been discussing. This is the field theory for random matrices, which are convenient for almost diagonal random matrices. Then the virial expansion, first version of that virial expansion were using some combinatorics, and now it is a field theory. It is not yet published or even posted in the CONMAT, but soon will be. Then there is this superconductivity stuff. And then there is an old stuff of relation to Kolmogorov satellite model, which I think is not properly studied. So I think that the relation to conformal field theory and probably the relation to the Ovner equation, let's dream, maybe require this stuff to be better studied. So that's all. Thank you very much.
We're pretty late, so why don't we do this? Whoever wants to leave is welcome to leave.
I delayed only 5 minutes. I delayed only 5 minutes.
And other people, you may have questions of those people who want to stay when we do this.
So does the field theoretic version of the virial expansion for most diagonal matrices give you a way of treating the insulator in our system with power?
Because basically in this work with Osipov, what we did as an example, so we wrote down this essentially psi functional, then introduced new variables in order to bring it to the form which is as close to sigma model as possible, and then as an example we studied strictly one-dimensional system. In that way, we derived the transfer matrix equation for strictly one-dimensional system, and that work is still continuing because having this equation, you can have an access to some subtle issues of one-dimensional localization, such as resonances at certain energies, and so basically the message is so people in certain community use the sigma model, but forgetting the psi functional, and the psi functional, if properly rewritten, it is not less convenient than the sigma model because you have the same thing, right? Q squared is equal one is only a certain, requires certain parametrization. If it is not equal one, but there is another parametrization, so what? It is very, technically it is the same, but it is exact. And because it is exact, you can go and study situations close to localization, strong fractality and localization itself, for example, one-dimensional localization.
You
show this remarkable agreement for the repulsion of the energy levels. You tune the value of B, and you've got this.
Yes.
Does the same value of B work for describing the multifractality at the Anderson transition? Or do you need another value of B to get a good fit to that?
No. The fact is that this is a very good question. So there is a level statistics and there is an eigenfunction statistics, right? And you are asking the following. You study eigenfunction statistics fractality of it, and you need some value of B. And you study level statistics, and you probably need another value of B. Are they coincide or not? Yeah, they do. They coincide. Coincide with some, of course, uncertainty, because, but they are very reasonably coinciding.
Do we have some more questions? Let's thank
Thank you for patience.